This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Hyperbaric Medical Solutions. If you suffer from a diabetic complication, radiation damage, stroke, or degenerative condition, hyperbaric oxygen therapy may be right for you. Call Hyperbaric Medical Solutions at 844-877-HBOT or visit hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com/Hoffman to learn more. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Once again, it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is an opportunity for you to send your questions to us, and we'll endeavor to answer them to the best of our ability. You can send them to radioprogram@AOL.com, radioprogram@AOL.com. And with us today is Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. She's a registered dietitian. She's also earned a master's degree in the field of nutrition. She has many years of experience working originally at the Atkins Center and subsequently here at the Hoffman Center for, I believe it is, almost 10 plus years. 10 plus years.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Oh, my gosh. It'll be 11 years in October.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Wow. Right. Time flies when you're having fun is true.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So, here we are in a living laboratory of nutritional science. And apropos of that, something that you recommend frequently to patients, the FODMAP diet, is in the headlines.
Oh.
Because there's a story in Science Daily that states the following. Clinical trial demonstrates success of low FODMAP diet. And we say,
no kidding!
Duh! In the first of its kind study in the U.S., those with irritable bowel syndrome overcame symptoms with diet changes compared to control. The study measured the degree of relief from low FODMAP, a frequently recommended diet, which stands for?
FODMAP?
Yeah.
Fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols.
Okay. So can you make sense of that mumbo-jumbo for us?
Oh, yeah. It's basically anything that's fermentable in your diet, primarily a whole lot of grains. These would be the polysaccharides. Monosaccharides are the single sugar things like fruits. Certain fruits can be highly fermentable, certain fruits more than others.
Pears, for example, are the sorbitol-containing, right?
Exactly.
That's a polyol.
Exactly.
That's a polyol as well.
So that's the polyols.
That's the P in the FODMAP.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Monosaccharides, disaccharides, which is your typical table sugar or lactose in milk. People don't realize there's sugar in milk. It's called lactose. Mm-hmm. So all of these fermentable things, and these are all carbohydrates, pretty much. So removing them from the diet can help quiet the belly down, less bloating, can often help to alleviate the symptoms of IBS, as well as other.
And what's interesting is that wheat is a fructan, I believe. And that's why some people say, well, I went gluten-free and I felt better. Actually, they're not really celiac or gluten intolerant. They are fructan intolerant.
Exactly.
It's based on the fermentation of that rather than the an allergy or celiac disease.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people will give up wheat. They will get GI symptom relief. Other people say, oh, well, I don't eat wheat anymore because I would eat wheat and get really tired and sluggish.
Right.
Well, that could be, yes, a wheat allergy or intolerance, but that could also be a blood sugar issue.
Moments ago, literally moments ago, we saw together a patient here at the Hoffman Center who's now she's 74.
This
and
Saturday.
She said she was, she would emphasize that.
Yes.
74 and just, you know, 1/360th, she was complaining of feeling tired and lethargic. Now, normally a physician, you know, seeing a patient 74 would say, Lee, what do you expect? You're 74, you know, you're slowing down. So I just listened to her a little bit. And I said, you know, you should try the following. Cut out sugar and cut out wheat. And she comes back ecstatic.
She is ecstatic. Yeah. It's so gratifying.
Because it wasn't about her being 74.
Yeah, it wasn't at all.
Yeah.
And you know what else? She was complaining of fatigue, being tired, not having enough mojo or anything. All that has changed. But something else that's changed is she used to get frequent colds.
Oh.
That's no longer happening.
All right.
Because of all that sugar she got rid of, all that bread, you know, all of this suppresses the immune system. So that right away, her immune system is better.
She still has a problem, though.
Better.
She says her husband likes to eat out and likes to eat rich meals.
Right.
So, but that's okay because she can select among the foods there.
Exactly. Right. She can make different choices on a menu.
Right.
It's perfect. And still enjoy eating out.
Right.
It's fine.
It's like, you know, let him enjoy himself
yeah.
and whatever. You know, he's not, we're not on the same page. That's okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So anyway, so let's proceed to questions because we have lots of
yeah.
them this week.
Actually, we've got a comment. We've got an email from Steve I'd like to read. Dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman, I understand GMO salmon was approved and will not be labeled. Now we're genetically modifying animals for consumption. Are we living in a democracy or a dictatorship? Don't Americans have a say in what they want to eat? Crossing DNA from salmon with an eel? Not for me. I guess Aqua Bounty and Monsanto think their food is better than God's food. Thank you, Steve. Well, Steve.
No comment.
No. you know, said it, Steve.
You know what's so interesting is that, you know, we think of Monsanto as this monolithic company, this gigantic company. There's this big war going on where Bayer is going to buy Monsanto.
Yes.
So they made an offer of, I think, $63 billion. And Monsanto said, as of today, maybe, you know, this may be dated as of next week because the deal may go through. Monsanto
yeah.
said, no way, we're worth more than $63 billion.
Wow.
But imagine what happens when you combine these two, like a pharmaceutical company with an agribusiness company and the potential for locking in a monopoly over seeds and pesticides and, oh my
oh,
goodness.
No,
yeah,
yeah.
Let's talk about world domination.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, and
yeah.
it, you know, antitrust anybody, you know, mm-hmm. is there any antitrust implications of such a merger?
Exactly.
Think about
exactly,
it.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
But so, we have to be able to source our food. Steve, we have to find your salmon from the right sources and so forth and continue. And, you know, organic farming as well is helpful. And, you know, we don't have to consume the genetically modified stuff.
Right.
We don't. Even on a bag of corn chips, you could still choose non-GMO if you're having corn chips. So, it's that kind of a thing. If you're still having cornography.
Right. Well, you know, here's one thing that they cite frequently. They say, well, look, we need this because the world's population is growing and we need to avoid starvation. However, it turns out that we've reached a tipping point in world history where the problem is not so much undernutrition. Now, yes, there are pockets of undernutrition. There's no question. There's some
yeah.
people in certain parts of the world who are not getting enough food.
Mm-hmm.
But that's often a question of, you know, dislocation and anarchy and poor governance and
yeah.
Warfare and chaos. The vast majority of people who are poor mm-hmm. these days get too much of the bad food. And the concern is that through agriculture productivity, we're making food that's poor quality cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, like corn
yes.
and corn products. They're so prolific that
yeah.
we can burn it as fuel. We can, you know.
That's the next
yeah,
reason
yeah.
for the crop being, is for the ethanol
yeah,
and for,
yeah.
for cars, for gasoline. Oh boy. And that and soy. So, and basically most of corn, I would say over 90% the last time I looked of soy in this country is genetically modified. Corn is a runner-up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But did you know that zucchini is also becoming GMO?
Oh, really?
And a lot of people don't know
okay.
that. So, you know, when we got to...
Why would they want to modify zucchini?
Yeah.
What's wrong with a regular zucchini?
Exactly.
I grow zucchini in my garden, you know.
There you go. That's not going to be GMO.
No.
That's,
well...
Yeah.
Hopefully. The seed may have floated over from...
Maybe. And that's the other thing, you know.
Cross-contamination.
Cross-contamination.
Yeah.
How do you stop that?
Right.
From one farm... There's wind. There's a breeze. How do we control that? You can't. Anyway. Steve, we agree with you. Okay. All right. We've got an email from Bart. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. It seems we hear so much good about fish oil, yet there are some dissenters such as Ray Peet and Brian Peskin. Ray Peet, for instance, states that fish oil is a direct causal agent of heart disease through its PUFAs being rancid in the body.
Yeah.
How do you respond to your patients that bring up these two people?
So let me just say in general that integrative physicians and alternative docs are very iconoclastic in their thinking. So they tend to rebel against any type of orthodoxy. So rebelling against the orthodoxy used to consist of telling people to have a lot of fish oil. That was an innovative idea. Now, that's become such an orthodoxy that some people are peeling off from that orthodoxy and demonstrating their nonconformism by attacking the nutritional orthodoxy, and they happen to be eccentric. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, with any idea, there are going to be some fringy people who are going to declare the opposite.
Right.
And it is true, theoretically, that fish oil is polyunsaturated. Therefore, it is potentially unstable and oxidizable.
Right.
That is in theory, okay? And that's, basic molecular biology. And you can infer from that that there might be, at least theoretically, a harmful effect of too many polyunsaturated fatty acids.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We know that that is the case with other polyunsaturated fatty acids of the omega-6 kind, like refined corn oil,
mm-hmm.
refined safflower oil. They actually may create a pro-oxidant effect in the body, and they're unstable, they can become rancid.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, with fish oil, if it sits around, it can become damaged or rancid. If you cook with it, it's not great.
If you keep it in your windowsill and
yeah.
the direct sunlight, these are not the places to store.
It should be in a dark bottle.
Yeah.
However, look at the epidemiology. Look at the studies. Look at what the studies are saying about the myriad health benefits, which we
yeah.
won't even get into because we'd be doing 10 podcasts.
That's true.
On fish oil. So what is also a concern, whenever somebody says something like that, I go, let me look at the economic interests. So if there's like a drug that's being touted, I'll say, I'll look at the fine print, which is usually like in very like 3 pica print, you know,
mm-hmm.
which you could barely read all the way at the bottom. It says, this study sponsored by SmithKline, you know, or Glaxo,
right.
SmithKline, you know, blah, 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 and for the drug that they want to promote. Well, it turns out that those guys are selling their, quote, healthy oils that are not fish oils. They're going to be flax oils, or they're going to be, you know, some concoction that they believe is better.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to separate the, you know, I'm sure they believe they're honest and sincere, but there's a monetary incentive
mm-hmm.
for them to promote their type of oil in favor of fish oil.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I remember reading about Brian Peskin, who's an electrical engineer.
Right.
Much like Stephanie Seneff, but I think Stephanie Seneff has really hit the nail on the head with gluten, where it were concerns, and
gluten,
glyphosate.
And also she's
that's something I'm gonna
opposes statins. I mean, she's also
all of that, yeah.
a very iconoclastic
yeah.
thinker. Yeah.
The one problem I had with Brian Peskin's writing is that he was a proponent of your skin actually prefers omega-6 and not this and not so much omega-3, that the ratio of omega-6 to 3 should actually be higher than what everybody else is saying, which
well,
should be 4 to 1.
Tell that to the Eskimos.
Exactly. Tell that to the Eskimos, number one. But you also need to look at the condition where the skin is grabbing more omega-6. It's in the presence of
right.
it. You have to consider the presence of it, and that's what I feel was missing.
Right. There are actually some people
hypothesis.
Who believe that the evolutionary leap to human intelligence was based on a change in the human diet where humans began to inhabit coastal areas where they harvested shellfish. You know, shellfish mm-hmm. used to be a major, major source of food. In some parts of the world, they are. New York Harbor, you know, at low tide, you could practically crunch your way across New York Harbor
uh-huh.
with the oysters that were in New York Harbor
yeah.
in, you know, say the 1600s and 1700s before it became utterly polluted.
Mm.
You know, so for indigenous people, fish and shellfish were a major source of food, and they think that that may have created a quantum leap in human intelligence that facilitated modern civilization because the brain was able to grow. And
all that nice zinc and selenium.
And become more, efficient, you know, mm-hmm. Creating more neural networks so that, human intelligence and language could develop.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, so.
So, yeah. Bart, we hope that answers your question, but there is just so much more evidence to the contrary to what these two gentlemen are espousing or proponent
yep.
of, so. Okay. I mean, in Italy, you know, if you have heart disease, first line of therapy is fish oil.
Right. In Italy, once they actually stipulate that when you have a bypass, you must take fish oil. That's mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. unfortunately contrasted to America where
yeah.
they say, well, you know, if you want, you're going to.
The other thing is so much good quality fish oil will have the antioxidant vitamin E to help prevent its rancidity.
I'm not sure if the inclusion in it is what's important. I think getting a dietary source or another supplemental source, it may be a little gimmick to put it physically in the capsule. I'm not sure that that stabilizes the oil to mix it together. Because I think that the protective thing happens not in the capsule, it happens in the cells. And you have to have vitamin E available in your cells rather than in the capsule. So there's sort of like a tokenism where they put like 5 international units of vitamin E in a capsule with fish oil to remind you that vitamin E is important, but I'm not sure in the capsule makes a difference.
Another myth, if I may bring up, people who talk about the cholesterol in eggs, don't scramble the eggs, don't do this, you're oxidizing the cholesterol.
I've heard that.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
You can eat the eggs in any form you wish. You can have them raw, you can have them soft-boiled, but your stomach acid is going to go and churn all that. Everything that you would have been doing in the bowl is going to do the same thing in your stomach. There's no way around that, so this is still going to occur.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to throw that out there, because I still hear this a lot.
And I'm reassured that you say that, because I invariably eat sunny-side-up eggs or scramble my eggs.
I scramble or I do over easy, or soft boiled too is fine, but or deviled. That's nice too. Okay. Bart, thank you.
I have this new thing for my scrambled eggs. I get these, what are called wraps. It's spelled W-R-A-W-P-S. It's a play on words raw. And these are a type of paleo wrap that is essentially, it looks kind of white. It's made from coconut. And it's like a thin wrap, and it like a, you know, like wraps, like
so you make a breakfast
wheat
burrito.
I make a breakfast burrito out of that wrap, but it's also a convenient way to kind of eat it with my hands, because I pick it up like you know, I put the scrambled eggs in that, and, you know, I could add like bacon bits, or I could add, you know, mushrooms and onions, and, you know, and I make a wrap, and I you know, and I just have that as a quick breakfast wrap.
Wonderful.
And I'm going to put in a plug. Thrive Market carries a lot of paleo products. It's a place where you can order some of these unusual products.
Thrive Market.
ThriveMarket.com.
Okay. We've got an email from Janice. She says, the front half of my feet are red, sometimes even purple, and often feel cold. My doctor says it's due to poor circulation, caused by a buildup of toxins, but offered little in terms of what to do about it. I'm 60 years old. What do you suggest?
Well, you know, it's a little hard to know what's going on without being the doctor and having the doctor's eyes, because you can get red and painful feet due to lack of circulation or due to a condition called erythromelalgia, which is actually kind of almost accelerated circulation, like a blood buildup. I don't know exactly what is going on there.
Could it be Raynaud's?
Well, Raynaud's
cold?
Sometimes, you know, it gets red, but it's more often it gets white, you know, white or purple, but that could be interpreted as red or dusky color. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah.
But accumulation of toxins, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Yeah, I've not heard that. But things that are good for circulation, besides fish oil.
Right.
Fish oil.
Bullets,
Ginkgo.
Ginkgo, pycnogenol.
Yeah.
We have a product now called Oligonol, which
Oligonol.
Has specifically been shown to be helpful in Raynaud's.
Mm-hmm.
It's Oligonol. Find it at drhoffman.com.
Mm-hmm.
Also the nitric oxide products, you know.
Yeah. Perfusia.
Beets. Extracts, you know, those are good.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh beets, beet juice.
Yeah.
If indeed it's, you know, an arterial problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's different if it's a vein problem versus an arterial problem, because certain things for veins would be vein PF. Is that the name of the product?
Venous PF.
Venous PF.
Venous PF.
V-E-N-O-U-S, not like Venus de Milo. Right. Okay.
Right.
I'm
going to throw something really stupid out there, Janice. Your doctor's probably already asked you, are your socks too tight or are your shoes too tight?
Okay, something along those. But, you know, what type of doctor is it? Is it a peripheral vascular surgeon? Those are the doctors most qualified to look at circulatory problems, and they can do proper tests like Doppler tests.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably don't use terminology like, there's too much toxins in your feet. You know, that doesn't sound very doctor-like.
It doesn't even sound podiatrist-like.
Right.
Best of luck to you, Janice. Oh, okay.
She needs to power wash her feet. get those toxins out.
Get those toxins out. We have an email from Susan. I love your show. Please discuss an anti-herpes diet. I was drinking coconut and almond milk, cooking with coconut milk and soups, eating Kind bars for a treat occasionally, and eating nuts daily. Otherwise,
didn't you just do a column on that?
Yes, on the anti-herpes diet. To answer Susan's question, as a matter of fact, she's using coconut oil. She's 71, and she's had a recent outbreak. So the anti-herpes diet, the herpes virus, is fed by the amino acid arginine. And what you want in the presence of high arginine-containing foods, such as nuts, such as Brussels sprouts, such as corn, chocolate, sorry, everybody, and gelatin, when you're eating or when you're consuming high arginine foods, you want to make sure that you're taking lysine to help antagonize it. And lysine is helpful for the immune system. So taking about a 500 milligram of lysine daily away from food, just for maintenance, is probably a good idea if you want to continue eating nuts. And I think you should continue eating nuts. They're a healthy food. And if you want to, and of course, Brussels sprouts, that's always a good food to have. And if you have an active infection, we're talking about cold sores, fever blisters, genital herpes. And in addition, the anti-herpes diet is also the anti-shingles diet, which is another herpes virus.
Right.
That's like a residue from chickenpox.
Exactly.
Long story short.
And may I add, you know, there are medications for this. There's Famvir and
Valacyclovir.
Valacyclovir, Zovirax. You also can, a nutrient that a lot of people don't think about that may have some benefit, it's a little bit esoteric, it's lithium orotate. Now, lithium is a medication in the form of lithium carbonate at 300 milligram per tablet.
Isn't that for bipolar?
Bipolar disease or manic depression. But lithium orotate is available, and it may have some mental health benefits, but lithium orotate is also available as a supplement, and you take 10 milligrams three times a day.
Is that for an active infection, 10 milligrams?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, I think more for an outbreak. Maybe there's a maintenance dose. But Jonathan Wright, who's a very famous holistic doctor, who actually I consider a mentor, he's been around longer than me. And when I was beginning my practice, he was well underway. He created a formulation called HPX, which combines lithium with selenium, lysine, as you said, vitamin C, and olive leaf extract as a natural remedy for herpes.
Oh, that's all good.
So you can find it. HPX, or Google Dr. Jonathan Wright and find out what he has to say about herpes, because that's a protocol that works. And olive leaf, we know, has antiviral properties.
Yeah.
So can I interrupt you? Because we generally pause after part one, divide our podcast into two parts. So let's stipulate this part one and give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
What about this study on Consumer Labs that says too much vitamin D weakens legs?
Consumer Labs, at it again. We'll tackle that in part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.